This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us. Welcome to episode 100 of the Podium Finish Live. TPF Live has hit the centennial mark, and I'm your host, Rob Tiansen. Joined alongside, as always, Nathan Solomon, my good friend and co-host. And on this edition, we're also joined by Brianna O'Leary, who is part of the NASCAR pit crew scene and a strength and conditioning coach with Rev Racing. So it's a full house here on this show. If those names sound familiar to you, it's probably because you've listened to every episode we've done since October 2021, because Brianna was also a guest host on that show, and we decided let's make it as retro as possible for our first episode of 2024. It does take a bit of time to say that instead of 2023. So if I say that, Nathan and Brianna will have to find me after the show, and I owe them like 5 cents each time I say the wrong year on the first few episodes of our 2024 season. But anyways, folks, we've got a great episode, and I'm not just saying that because it's the centennial episode, but we've also got a Texas-sized guest for our show. Yes, indeed, folks. We have two-time NASCAR Cup Series champion Terry Labonte stopping by a little bit later on in a phone interview that I did with him late last year for the show. So I'm super pumped about that. But why don't we go ahead and bring in Brianna and Nathan right now? But ladies first, Nathan. So sorry, buddy. You're going to have to wait your turn. But Brianna, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I am so good. How are you doing?
Couldn't be any better.
Good.
How about you, Nathan?
Doing well. I'm glad it's the new year. Ready to rock and roll here in 2024. We've got a month until the Clash. So that's kind of crazy. But just riding along with St. Bonaventure basketball for now.
Yeah, our team is still out there, still doing what we got to be doing. And of course, got to help Nathan's ratings go up on the ESPN Plus side, because he does do some fantastic commentary on that. So do
next to- Wednesday is my next game, January 10th, 7 p.m. Eastern time. So y'all tune in.
That means, folks, that you better listen to his calls and then listen to him on the podcast. That's a homework assignment for you folks. So do that up. And Nathan's graduating this year, so this is a big year for my co-host. Yeah, super awesome. I know. You're going to be in the real world, my friend.
I know.
It's okay. It's not as bad as you think it is.
It's crazy because the whole – I started when, you know, COVID was a thing, and now it's like here we are 4 years later.
Yeah, just like that. It's crazy. I know. This show basically has revolved around your collegiate life, so – does it mean the show ends after you graduate? No, I'm kidding. It doesn't
Hope
end.
Not.
No. We're going to still be rocking and rolling. Are you kidding me? We got 100 more episodes at least for you folks. I'm so excited about this. And Nathan and I are acting like the NASCAR season hasn't kicked off. But for Brianna, of course, your racing life has just started already, because you guys are already hard at work, aren't you?
Yeah, we actually went back to practicing this week. So I'm straight home for practice. Came home, had dinner, and now I'm talking to you guys.
So. It's a good, we're the best part of your day, I'd say.
Absolutely.
I hope we are, at least. We'll try. No guarantees. But I am so pumped about this episode and the fact it's 2024. Yes, racing's almost over here, because we've got the Rolex 24 later this month and the Roar before the 24. So yes, folks, we will be down in Daytona. Well, not me personally, but the outlet will be there. And if you haven't heard the news, folks, we are also doing a content partnership with Sports Illustrated's Auto Racing Digest, which is led by Motorsports Journal's columnist, veteran extraordinaire, Jerry Ponkowski. So I'm super honored to be having some of my works on his outlet and establishment. And they'll also do some cross-posting with us, but there'll also be exclusive content that I'll be doing still for TPF as well as for Auto Racing Digest, just to set the record clear. I'm not being lazy and copying, pasting. We're just trying to give both outlets a chance to shine and give you motorsports fans more content. So look out for that this year. I can't wait. But before we get to all the nitty gritty in podium perspectives, why don't we hear from our presenting sponsors, SpoilerDiecast.com. Hey, racing fans. Are you in the hunt for the latest and greatest in diecast cars? Head on over to SpoilerDiecast.com to get the latest offerings in Lionel Racing, NASCAR collectibles, IndyCar collectibles from Greenlight Collectibles, and much more. If you spend $20 or more in in-stock or pre-order items, you can save 5% off your order and get free shipping with promo code TPF. So head on over to spoilerdiecast.com, spend $20 or more, and use promo code TPF to get free shipping and 5% off your order. Evan and his team get those orders out fast in lightning speed fashion. A proud sponsor of TPF Live. Yes, indeed, folks. SpoilerDieCast.com is where it's at for the latest and greatest diecast car offerings. And of course, with the new season, that means your diecast cars for this year should be arriving in the next few several months from now. I know it's a little bit of a waiting period, but as we saw last year, once they rolled in from China, there were just a bunch more coming to the domestic land. So just stay tuned. Pre-order right now. Use that promo code TPF and save 5% off your orders of $20 or more and free shipping. Win-win all around. But right now, let's get into it. It is time for Podium Perspectives, powered by SpoilerDiecast.com. Now, we begin our Podium Perspectives for the first episode of 2024 on a rather somber note, because before last year concluded, we lost a very legendary driver in Cale Yarborough at the age of 83. He passed away on December 31st of 2023, and this man contributed so much to the world of NASCAR. I mean, I was born just after he was winning races, and I don't really have a lot of memories of him when he was racing at the time, but of course, I have many memories, which I'll share in a bit, about him being a car owner and, of course, his role in NASCAR. But we'll start off with Brianna and then hear from Nathan. I know Cale was kind of somebody that may have come after both of y'all's times, but I'm sure you've got some stories or memories about him that you want to share with the fans.
Yeah, it's funny. So, not funny, but this is actually the second conversation I've had today about this. And it actually just, like, reminded me I should go. I'm far behind the NASCAR history. In terms of the NASCAR world, I am still new to the sport. And there's just so much history I have to catch up on. And so whenever there is like a huge loss in the sport, I just reflect on it. I'm like, you know, wow, it's crazy how long this sport has been around and how much history I still have to learn. So in this instance, he is still somebody like I need to go learn about. But of course, you see all the social media posts and the impact he did have on the sport and the impact he had on people's hearts in the sport. And so seemed like a good guy.
No, those are some good thoughts for sure, Brianna. And I'm sure the NASCAR Hall of Fame has a lot of good information and stuff about him that you could check out. But Nathan, what are your thoughts on Cale?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat too as Brianna, because like I'm younger, I'm 21, you know, I'm newer into the sport. So I don't know. I think the history compared to, you know, some people that have been around a lot longer than I have. But I mean, obviously, you know, Cale is one of the legends of this sport. What a four-time Daytona 500 winner, one of the few, you know, three-time, you know, consecutive champions and of the Cup Series. And I mean, at this point with this, you know, format of this playoff format, we're probably never going to see something like that again. I mean, we talk about Jimmy Johnson, you know, winning five championships in a row. We're certainly never going to see three championships in a row, or I'm not even sure how many times we're ever going to see, you know, two championships in a row. So what he did was historic, a pioneer of the sport. You know, I know one of the most popular drivers back when he was racing. So definitely, you know, a huge loss to the NASCAR community. I know how well respected he was, especially upon, you know, those some of the older fans. So you know, he leaves a great legacy in the sport and is one of the greatest drivers that NASCAR's ever had, for sure.
He certainly is. And I think a lot of folks that are young may remember Cale as the guy that was involved in the big brawl at Daytona in 1979. So if you folks have ever seen the 1979 Daytona's 500's finish, you'll know about the Donnybrook in turn three between Donnie Allison, Cale Yarborough, and Bobby Allison duking it out, because both Cale and Donnie cost each other the victory, and Bobby came to his brother's defense, and then Cale decided to put a, you know, kind of butt whooping, if you will. So it's a scene that most people will know. And of course, he was one of the first drivers, as Mike Joy pointed out on X, that he won the Daytona 500 with a camera, which today it sounds like nothing, but in 1983 and 84, with the technology that was around, that was a big deal. So there's a line, as a quote by Quikkale, rather, that I often remember him by. He says, "In racing, there are no shortcuts. Hard work and dedication are the keys to victory." So I like that about him. And he also said once that you can't let fear hold you back. You got to take risks and push yourself beyond your limits. And that's one thing Cale always did. He always went beyond the limits. And he found that out in 1983 at Daytona when he was going to be on the pole. And then he wrecked his car going airborne in turns 3 and 4. But he still wound up winning the race in a show car. So that was a big deal by the man who people said was the no-neck man from Timmonsville, South Carolina. So our condolences, of course, to Cale's family and his friends and his associates in the world of NASCAR. And Cale will always be remembered around our circles in motorsports. Now let's actually talk about some news from silly season talk, because Ty Dillon, I'm not making fun of him when I say this. People on the internet thought that they were bullying Ty out of the Colic Racing ride, the number 16 car. And I don't know if that was the case or not. I don't think so. But what I can say for a fact is that Ty Dillon is going to be driving for Rackley War Racing this year in their number 25 Chevrolet Silverado entry in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series. Pretty big deal. I know some are saying, oh, that's a step back for him to be going to the Truck Series. But Bree, and of course from Nathan, how will he fare with his new home?
I think as a race car driver, like, of course, maybe the goal for everybody is to be racing at the top level, but they want to be racing. And so maybe for him, this was the best opportunity to run well and be in something that he can compete in. And so I know people, it's quick and easy for people to say, oh, he took a step back, but then you look back at what he just was previously doing. What rides he was in before, whether it be in the Cup Series. I mean, if you're running in the back in the Cup Series, but you have the opportunity to go compete for wins in the Truck Series, it's kind of like, well, go for it. It's not, he's still racing and one of the premier series of NASCAR. So good for him. I think he'll do well, and I hope he does.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I echo that. I mean, I think this is a really great opportunity for him. I think the last couple of years at the Cup level, he hasn't necessarily had some of those opportunities to get in race winning cars, whether that be at Legacy or that be at Spire this past year. So now he goes into a truck that has shown it can win in the Truck Series. I think he's also kind of one of the quickest, I guess, a truck with a rising stock, if you will, a team that's on the up, has had a lot of speed last year. I think he'd much rather run fifth, sixth in the Truck Series than, run in the back of the field of the Cup Series. And that's also not to say that he won't run in the Cup Series. I know he said in one of his interviews somewhere, I think it may have been on XM or with a reporter somewhere, that, Cup is not out of the window with a part-time deal. He's trying to piece something together there. So I don't think that, maybe going to the Colic 16 car is completely out of the window, because it sounds like as of right now, that's going to be some sort of all-star car. So maybe we see him in there a little bit, I think, but I think him putting most of his time and resources towards that truck, a truck that I think, I'm not sure if it can go out and win the championship, but I think it can be in the mix and potentially win a couple of races. And I think he can have a really successful year. So maybe this could be something that can kind of relaunch, rejuvenate his career a little bit. I think he still could potentially be a cup driver again in a couple of years, or a full-time cup driver in a good ride once some opportunities come about. But if taking, quote unquote, a step back, he goes into a really good truck where now he has an opportunity to really prove his worth and go out and win some races against a Truck Series field that's really getting, tougher and tougher, it seems like, by the week. I mean, just seeing all these different driver announcements and everything. I mean, the Truck Series is going to be really talented this year. So, he'll have his work cut out for him, even though he's in a really good truck, but I think he'll have an opportunity to do really well there.
Yeah, sometimes you got to take a few steps back to go a few steps forward. And I think honestly, this is probably the best situation he could get, because the 25 truck is capable of winning. We saw Matt DiBenedetto win with him at Talladega, what, maybe a couple of years ago, I think it was, when he missed the playoffs. So, I mean, this team can win races, and they're going to get a cup veteran to help solidify their program even more, because I'm looking at, someone like Dawson Sutton, who could be driving that truck maybe in a couple of years' time. And he's a really talented short track racer right now in the circle track scene. So you might as well put a veteran in there and see what you can learn from him before you put Dawson in that truck, because presumably he will be in that ride at the end of this decade. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them having some good runs for sure. You were kind of alluding to the fact, Nathan, that the Truck Series field is pretty stacked, because Spire Motorsports as well announced this week that Chase Purdy's going to be driving the number 77 truck entry this year. So we'll start with you, Nathan, and then Brianna. Is this a good situation for him? Because we know that Spire bought out KBM. Do you think this is going to be more of the same from him, or do you think he'll do some good stuff with that team?
I feel like last year in 2023, Chase Purdy kind of started to take a jump in the right direction. We kind of saw him in the field there for a couple years in, I'd say, some pretty decent stuff, but kind of failing to exist in a sense and not really putting together some good runs. But we kind of finally started to see that potential this past year. Now he goes to a Spire truck where, in previous years when or in races when that Spire truck was in the field, like last year or the year before, it was one of the best trucks in the field. And I think Spire now, they're investing a lot of money into that, organization as a whole with, going to three cup cars here in 2024 and ramping up the Truck Series stuff. So they're putting a lot of money into that team. And I think because of, A, the assets that they've acquired from KBM and B, the money that they're already putting in to start with, I think that it's gonna be a really competitive truck. It's probably gonna be the best truck he's been in. He's with a veteran crew chief, Jason Trinchier. He's coming over there from Colleg Racing, so he's got a crew chief that knows how to win. So the ingredients are there, the recipe's there for Chase Purdy to have a really successful year. But if you want to stay in the sport, you gotta go out and win, and he's not done that yet, really. I think he can go out and this is a big year for him. He's got to go out and try to get that win and make it into the playoffs. And then, once you get into the playoffs, anything can really happen. But like I said, the ingredients are there for him to succeed. He just finally has to put everything together. And I think that Spire, with the direction that it's heading, it's a good place for him to do that. But it's starting to get to the point in his career, though, where it's make or break. If he has a big year, then we could see a lot of Chase Purdy in the future.
Yeah, as Nathan was saying, like obviously Spire has seemed to like just take over the NASCAR world. It's like they're everywhere. And so I think that's a good place for anybody to end up, honestly. They're on the come up. They do have the resources, they do have the money, and they are trying to go in the direction of being, a top premier team in whatever series they run in. And so yeah, I don't see any issue with any driver ending up there. I think that it's a good place for anybody to end up.
I mean, just think of the growth that Spire has done in the last, what, say, 5, 6 years, because a lot of folks were saying, oh, they lucked into that victory with Justin Haley at Daytona in the Cup Series. But year after year, they've built something solid. And even with COVID hitting, it didn't slow them down, because, Corey LaJoie's done a pretty decent job with them. We saw Carson Hocevar before he was named to the Cup ride do a good job with them in a Gateway. And then also, too, they were able to get some victories in the Truck Series with Kyle Larson last year at North Wilkesboro. So I think Spire Motorsports is saying, hey, we're here to stay. We're not only just wanting good, drivers. We want good crew chiefs. We want good spotters, good pit crew members. And, they're definitely finally putting that investment towards their program to be more than just a team that's got, the marketing and agency experiences, but to be a legitimate force on the racetrack. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do. And I wouldn't be surprised if they make the playoffs this year with Chase Purdy. So it is make or break time, like Nathan said. I agree. And also to Brianna's point as well, it's kind of like where Kyle Petty was at in his career in 1984, 85. It was called put up or shut up time for him. And for Kyle's sake, he was able to put up instead of shut up in NASCAR. And I think Chase will do the same thing too this year in the Truck Series. Now, before we get into our last few topics, I'm going to talk about Alpha Prime Racing, because it was announced earlier this week that the number 45 entry, which we know is the third car for Alpha Prime Racing, is going to be now running a part-time schedule with Cesar Barcarello running at least the four super speedway races beginning at Daytona. The other racers and the racers and tracks are yet to be decided in this case. So We'll start with Bree and then Nathan. What are your thoughts about APR kind of consolidating their efforts to have two full-time cars and then the number 45 car being sort of the part-time entry for them?
I mean, I guess I think maybe it was the smart move. I don't think they made that decision lightly because, Tommy does want to go out and run three cars and he does want to run well. But sometimes smaller teams, the resources are stretched thin. And so going down to two full times and one part time car was maybe the right decision for them so they can work up these two full time cars and get something going later for the future. As y'all know, for me, like being an Alpha Prime tire changer last season, it kind of hurts me and impacts me a little bit. And so, like, it does kind of suck for me on that side, but I understand. It's the name of the game. You got to do what works for you as a team. And so, I hope, I just hope it's they have a better year. I know last year there was a lot of ups and downs. And so I just hope that 2024 for Alpha Prime just is a little elevated from next year, whether it be because of cutting down to, the third car being part-time or whatever. So.
Yeah, and I think with Alpha Prime and Tommy Joe and those guys, I think they kind of recognize, I guess, the changing landscape of the Xfinity series because going into this year, I mean, kind of in the sense similar to the Truck Series, there's probably the most competitive cars that the Xfinity series has seen in a long time, at least since, we had all the Cup guys running it down there, back in 2010, 2011. But there's, at this point, I'd say probably 16, 18 cars that can go out and win a race. So it kind of makes things tougher for some of those more underfunded teams. So I think if you're Tommy Joe, you kind of have to think, I guess, bigger picture like that and say, okay, maybe we can pour resources a little bit more into two full-time cars instead of three. And that maybe can give them a chance to, succeed a little bit more and say, hey, maybe with going to two full-time cars, we can get to the, top 20 points, where they're, because of course, top 20 points is so huge in trucks and Xfinity series to get a significant owner's points payout compared to if you're below 20th. So I think maybe they're thinking that can give them a better chance to get within that top 20. So it's tough. I mean, you're looking at four cars for JGR. We could be looking at four cars for Kolig. The list goes on and on. RCR's got, three cars, including Big Machine, two cars for Stewart Haas Racing. It's just so difficult, or as difficult as it's ever been in the Xfinity Series to win races. So I think by going down to two full-time cars, that will allow them to maybe boost the resources a little bit more in those two cars.
I think so too. And they have to kind of be economic about what they're doing with their situation as one of the few teams that doesn't have an affiliation with a Cup team too. It's pretty tough to be, the David against the Goliaths of NASCAR, whether it's trucks, Xfinity, or Cup. And yeah, that's a great point you brought up, Nathan, about how the competition's so stacked. We don't let's not forget Hendrick Motorsports will probably have an entry as well. And once you have them on track, it's just even tougher for sure. So it's not just the drivers and, the owners getting affected. As you heard from Brianna, her situation gets affected as well. So hopefully we'll get some clarity on that. And you still will be pitting in the Xfinity series a little bit more than just when the 45 is at the racetrack. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here this month before we get down to Daytona for the Xfinity series when the season kicks off in earnest around Valentine's Day race weekend. And actually just a bit after that, but that's the tough side about the business is when things are being consolidated, it does impact other people's livelihoods. So we'll see what happens with that for sure. Speaking of changes, Chase Elliott's going to have a change in the spotter stand for sure this year. Now, if the name Trey Poole sounds familiar to you, that's because he did do some spotting for Chase a few years ago. And with Eddie DeHaan moving over to be with Josh Berry's number four team this year in the Cup Series, we're going to bring back Trey Poole into the Cup Series as Chase's official full-time spotter in the number nine's Cup program this year. We'll start with Bree again and Nathan. How will this be for Chase to listen to his cousin on the radio telling him clear high, clear low? And will this be a bit of adjustment period for him?
Yeah, so clearly I am behind here. I'll be honest, I'm a tire changer and I kind of I learn about what I want to learn about and get involved in what I want to get involved in. So like say something like that, I'm like, And then I don't like think much into like the impact of like what it could have. I didn't know that was Chase's cousin, and I think something like that. Obviously, they have the manpower and the resources to get to build such a great team and trust and communicate. And so, I don't know. It's one of those things, like for me, where it's like, oh, well, I guess we just wait and see, huh?
Kind of a tough draw for Chase. You know, he breaks his leg in that snowboarding accident in March, and then Josh Berry comes in and replaces him, and then Josh Berry gets a full time Cup ride and takes the spotter with him. So, but no, I mean, I think it'll be fine. I mean, obviously he spotted for him before. Trey Poole has under, you know, different circumstances and road courses as well. I also want to say that Trey Poole, he also spotted for somebody else in the Cup Series, maybe for a couple races last year. There's some other circumstance where I think he replaced somebody in the spotter stand for a little while too. So certainly not a stranger to it. Obviously, I don't think Chase would sign off on it if he felt that he wasn't, you know, up to the level of Eddie DeHaan or any other Cup spotter. So I think, honestly, if anything, it might help him because, you know, he's one of his, you know, a cousin, and I imagine basically a close friend. So I think it'll work out well for him.
It will for sure. And I think it was Bubba Wallace that Trey worked with last year in the summer race at Richmond, I think. So if memory serves me right, you guys can correct me.
I think you are right.
Yeah, because I kind of remembered hearing about this midsummer, and I was like, that name sounds familiar to me. But no, I think Trey will do a great job for Chase. For drivers, it's a big deal to have a good spotter because they put a lot of trust into that individual to tell them, besides clear high, clear low, you know, like the lines they have to search around the racetrack. So I think it's going to be fine. It's going to be unique to work with a family member full time, though, because even if it's your cousin, like at times I'm sure there will be some inside jokes when things are going really well. And when things are going bad, it might get a little bit more snipey, a little bit more personal. So that's the dynamic I'm going to be looking forward to hearing, whether I'm home or at the racetrack, about how Chase and Trey are going to communicate with each other. I will say this much. I've had my sisters on the radio. I'm sure they'll just be teasing me the entire time. So I hope Trey's a little bit easier on Chase, but it's going to be interesting to see because, and I never thought of that, Nathan. Chase gets injured in Colorado with a snowboarding accident. Josh Berry comes in, almost wins at Richmond, and takes his spotter with him. So that's kind of an interesting twist right there. Man, I didn't think about that one. Now, for our last topic for putting perspectives, this one's going to be a bit fun because I like to have this be the fun topic for us and the panelists. So with the New Year being here, and I know Nathan's opinions on New Year's is real, it's a little bit more pragmatic, I get it. But, you know, for NASCAR teams, what's a New Year resolution that you think that they're going to be making for this year? We'll start off with Bree, and then Nathan, I want to hear how creative you guys will get with this one.
I mean, obviously, I'm going to go with, like, the cliche, every race team is going to want to win more races maybe than they did the year before. But I think a lot of teams, at the beginning of a new year, beginning of a new season, they just harp on getting better every day. And I mean, I think it's as simple as that to say, get better every day. And so it comes down to them then putting in the work to get better every day. But I don't know what else, you know, they could hope for and wish for as a race team, is to go in and be better every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think every team certainly has their goals going into 2024. But I mean, I guess the team I'll highlight here is Stewart Haas Racing. You know, they've had a couple of, you know, really tough years, especially this past year. You know, they go winless for the first time in I don't know how long. You know, now they obviously kind of have a bit of a changing of the guard with Kevin Harvick and, you know, Josh Berry going into the four car, Noah Gregson coming in. So they just kind of have a whole new roster of drivers. And with them having a couple of tougher years, you know, I think certainly they'd like to get a couple of those drivers to victory lane and have a little bit more of a presence in the playoffs. So I guess that's where I'll head with that. But yeah, if you couldn't tell, I'm personally not a fan of New Year's. So I hate the whole, like, celebrating. Like, maybe it's New York City that ruins it for me. So just seeing everybody
New
run
Year,
into
New
the
Year.
Times Square and watch the ball drop. I don't know. I hate that. So maybe I don't know, but I hate it.
Oh, we have some interesting perspectives because Bree's a 90s baby. Nathan's basically a 21st century kid, and I'm from the 80s, so I'm the dad in this group. So I'll make a joke with this one for the New Year's resolution. I think for Denny Hamlin, his New Year's resolution is to not to speed too much on pit road this year, because by golly, how many races did he give away last year speeding on pit road? So maybe he'll be a little bit easier on the throttle on pit road this year, so he doesn't get busted on that. But really, I think for a New Year's resolution, if I had to be serious about this for a team, I am going to be looking at Rick Ware Racing with Justin Haley. I think his New Year's resolution is to maximize every possible avenue to have a good finish, because this is going to be a year of survival for him after being with Colleg Racing for what, like 4 or 5 or 6 years or something like that. And Rick Ware Racing, I'm not saying they're a bad team, but this is a team that's definitely not in the same tier as Colleg, but with possibly having better partnerships around in the Ford camp, and Justin being such a great talented driver, maybe they'll be lifting that program up a little bit higher. But I'll be curious to see how things go for him. So I think for him, I think he'll say, if I can get a top 25 points finish this year, it's been a good year, but let's just bring it on to 2025 and see how things shake out with the Ford camp. But what do you think, folks? What is a New Year's resolution for our NASCAR team or driver this year? Tell us on social medias. I'm at Rob Tionks and Nathan's at NSolly02. And if you even want to tell Brianna, you can go tell Brianna too. And she'll probably just be like, Rob, you tell them. I don't know what to tell them. No, I'm kidding. Get with us on X, Instagram, Facebook, Threads. Does anyone use Threads these days? No?
I'll go
I
read
used it
the
the first
threads.
weekend.
Yeah, I like to read them sometimes, but
I'm trying to get into it. It's hard without the hashtags, but that's my opinion. Or even more obscure, hit us up on Blue Sky.
I don't even know what that is,
I
so
don't
oh, I
We
know.
have a
It's
burger restaurant back home called Blue Sky, so.
well, maybe get with Brianna's friends at Blue Sky in Amarillo and tell us
Yeah,
your
there you go.
opinions. No, but yeah, hit us up on socials, folks. We want to hear from you folks. And if we happen to get a good funny response or a good actual good response from you, we'll send you an in-stock diecast car from spoilerdiecast.com. Pretty simple like that. So hope to hear from you folks. And yes, this some of these clips will be on YouTube because we're trying to be like the junior download or whatever shows on his Dirty Mo Posse thing. Nathan knows more about this than I do, but you'll probably see some clips of us on YouTube at last. We do exist. We're not AI. Hard to believe, I know.
It only took 100 episodes, everyone.
I know. We're finally going to expose ourselves, our faces here. So yeah, finally episode 100, get to see what I look like, Nathan looks like, and everyone knows what Brianna looks like. So she's like the more credentialed one of us two, three here, but
Yeah.
it's all
I
good.
might
We
have
love
known
it.
how to brush my hair, but okay, here we
Oh,
are.
it's okay. I didn't get the message that I needed to wear a hoodie today,
Yep.
because you and Nathan are rocking them, and I'm in my middle-aged dad shirt today. So it's just how we do. But anyways, folks, I don't want to make it all about middle-aged fathers. We're gonna have a lot of fun talking about racing, because coming up now on TPF Live, it's time to be in the hot seat with Terry Labonte. All right, well, welcome back, everyone, to a special edition of In the Hot Seat here for the podium finish. I'm Rob Tionkson, and on this edition of In the Hot Seat, I am very honored to have two-time NASCAR Cup Series champion and 2016 NASCAR Hall of Famer Terry Labonte here with me. And he is a fellow Texan just like me, but unlike me, he's a real Texan, so it's cool to have the Lone Star State boys here in the house. So, Terry, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you on. I cannot believe we're actually having this great conversation we're about to have. And if my 12-year-old self knew that this was going on, he'd probably be beside himself right now. But I'll do my best to conduct myself professionally, of course. But yeah, I just wanted to kind of go over overview of your career and just what you've done during this amazing career of yours, considering it's still the NASCAR 75th anniversary season, and next year, of course, in 2024, it's the 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsports. So all kinds of anniversaries that are going on, but let's start with your beginnings, of course. Now, you started your career racing here in Texas, mainly in Houston and in San Antonio during the mid-1970s.
So I'm kind of curious, how did NASCAR become a path for you for your racing career?
Well, we actually got started in Corpus Christi down there racing, and then when I was younger, I raced quarter midgets for several years until I was like 15, and then my dad built me a stock car. We raced in Corpus, then we started racing in San Antonio and Houston, and typically we'd race on, you know, Saturday night or something, and then Sundays we would, of course, living in Texas, you would always they would always cover, you know, AJ Foyt and Johnny Rutherford, guys like that, and so I always was interested in, and that was the local news that always covered, you know, what they had accomplished that weekend, usually on Sunday nights, and so I started following it that way, and really I guess I became interested in NASCAR when AJ was driving for the Wood Brothers. And then after he quit driving for the Wood Brothers, David Pearson started driving for him. And I just continued to follow NASCAR and the Wood Brothers. And back then, we could only listen to the races on the radio. It was a channel out of Galveston, an AM channel out of Galveston that carried the races. And really, the only way you could pick it up most of the time was if you went to the Padre Island and you could listen to the race. So a lot of times on Sundays, we'd go to the beach and listen to the NASCAR race. And that's when I guess I got interested in it. And then I guess my dad took me back before the races were televised. I think it was 1967. And I went to when the races used to be televised, they were on closed circuit TV. And so you had to go to a movie theater and watch it. And so we went and watched the Daytona 500. And I just thought it was the coolest thing, you know, growing up. In Texas, I never dreamed that I'd have the opportunity to, you know, one day move to North Carolina and actually race in the NASCAR series. But I guess I was very fortunate and just kind of the right place at the right time.
That's really cool. And just kind of hearing your description of how you got into racing and how NASCAR was, that's quite true because, you know, you had to listen to AM radio. This was even before MRN was even a thing, I think. So, like,
yeah.
It's incredible to know, and watching those old Motor Trend, like Nickelodeon stuff on the screen had to be captivating, but it had to be another thing when you were actually the one behind the wheel, and by the time you got to be behind the wheel of a cup car in full, you know, anger was 1979, and that happened to be a year with a really good rookie class, because it was just, it was you, Joe Milliken, Harry Gant, and of course, Dale Earnhardt racing in that rookie honors that season. So what was it like to race in the Cup Series by that point when you were only 23 years old and you're going against these competitive rookie racers?
You know, I think, you know, it was kind of an unusual year that year because there was three of us. I think three of the four of us finished in the top 10 in the point standings. And so that was kind of unheard of to have that three rookies, you know, finish in the top 10 in points. So, you know, we kind of, you know, all started our career at the same time. And it was just, I ran five races in 1978 and did that. And then we ran for the rookie of the year deal the next year. And, you know, sometimes when you race in the racing business, you kind of just go from week to week. You don't know if you're going to have a job the next week. Depends how you did last week, I guess. You know, when you don't own your own car, you're driving for somebody else. And I was just fortunate that I was able to drive for Billy Hagan for a long time. And he actually sponsored my late model cars when I raced in Texas. So it was just a chance of a lifetime to be able to move to North Carolina and race with his NASCAR team.
And that was an incredible season, too, because there were three of the four of you guys finished in the top 10 in points. Not to mention, that's when NASCAR finally got a live broadcasting partner in CBS with Ken Squire, David Hobbs, Brock Yates in the pits, yeah. And Jarrett was in the pits. This is 6 years before I was born, so I did the 1979 Daytona 500. And it's just amazing to me because I've been watching a lot of the old NASCAR races, and to me, and maybe you could attest to this better, Terry, because you've raced a lot of generations of cars. Those cars back in the late 70s, early to mid 80s, it seems like you had to have a lot of strength and stamina to even handle them. So I'm just kind of curious, how did you keep physically prepared to drive those cars, given how long those 10 to 11 month seasons used to be back then.
Yeah, they were, but in the cars, you know, were a lot different than what we raced later. But they have you know, no power steering back then, and of course, I think one advantage I had was growing up in South Texas, it was always hot down there, so the heat didn't really bother me that much. I was pretty much used to it, but it was you know, it was different. The cars didn't drive good compared to later on, you know, when we finally had cars that actually drove a little bit better. But I never will forget that 79 Daytona 500, and we were running there late in the race, and our clutch went out. I left pit road. We had transmission problems, and that clutch came out. And I coasted to the back straightaway and pulled off the track and stopped there. And it was like just 10 laps to go, and I stopped there, and I got out of the car, and I was standing there. And here they came for the last lap, and it was Donnie Allison and Cale Yarbrough, and they're beating on each other going down the back straightaway. And then they went off in the corner, and you heard the crowd cheer or yell and everything. I was standing in the back of a NASCAR safety truck with a guy, and I said, "Man, what happened?" And he had his radio on. He said, "Well," he said, "they're fighting down there." He said, "It's Bobby Allison and Cale Yarbrough." I said, no, that was Donnie Allison." He said, "Nope, they said it was Bobby Allison," and sure enough, it was Bobby Allison. He stopped to help Bobby or Donnie have, you know, in the fight down there. So that was my first Daytona 500, and it was quite one to remember.
I can only imagine, and see, it's a story you could still tell over 40 somewhat years later, and it's the moment that I think put NASCAR on the map, and I love that you have that perspective of it, you know, and it's so cool because I think that helped bring in a lot more TV partners by that point, because by the mid-80s, we had CBS, we had TBS, ESPN, I think ABC wasn't even one of the partners as well, doing flag-to-flag coverage of these races. And the one thing I think a lot of younger fans don't understand that I understand fully, but I kind of want to get your perspective on this. You were one of the first drivers to have an in-car camera and, you know, the booth would often radio you literally before you got the green flag. What was it like to be one of those first drivers to say, you know what, you guys can have a camera in my car and, yeah, you can radio me before I go and do my day job?
Yeah, I think the first time we had a camera in our car was 1981, and I never finished a race with a camera in my car. So I was not a big fan of having a camera in my car because something always happened, you know. So I was like, I don't want those in my car. And so, but every now and then you had to tolerate it for the sponsor, and so anyway. They were cool. I just like them better than somebody else's car.
You're like, you can go to, I don't know, Darrell's car or, you know, Richard's car.
That's
funny. Well, hopefully by then, like the later years, they got a little bit better. But no, it's so incredible to see the technology that even deploy such things that today we take for granted. But It was neat to see, because when I watched those races, I'm like, that's a lot of ingenuity to do all of that. And along the same time.
You wouldn't believe how big those cameras were back then. I mean, they were just massive compared to the cameras they have today. So it was quite a job actually just installing the camera, you know, because they were big old cameras back then.
Who needs Tom Cruise and Days of Thunder when we had you and the real drivers doing the job that we should have seen on the big screen, you know? So that's pretty cool. And, you know, along that same era, I know you were racing for Billy Hagan, who was a businessman from Louisiana. Back in the 80s, that was the old number 44 Piedmont Airlines Chevrolet Monte Carlo. And, you know, I'm kind of curious, what did it mean for you to build your career around him and his team, and by 1984 have a legendary crew chief in Dale Inman work for you?
Yeah, you know, we Billy had a kind of a vision to build a team and into something that, you know, could compete for the championship. And I can remember we won our first race in 1980 at Darlington. And I can remember being in the press box and, after the race. And I don't know, somebody had asked Billy a question or something. And he said that he had planned on, you know, winning the championship within 5 years. And this was 1980. And I thought to myself, I looked at him, I thought, man, we just won our first race. You know, we got a long way to go to win a championship. But, you know, he was right. He was able to put together a team, and we had a lot of great people that worked for us. And Dale Inman was just a fantastic crew chief that surrounded himself with excellent people. And, you know, we won the championship in 84 and really felt like we had a great shot at it in 85 and 86 and you know, came up short, but that's, you know, that's the way it goes.
It was a great time in NASCAR because by the mid-80s, you know, we had the current guard that would last until the early 2000s, making their presence known. Of course, you were there. Harry Gant was, you know, doing his thing with Hal Needham's team. Dale Earnhardt was with RCR by that point. And Richard Petty had the Curb Records deal with the 43 team. So it was an interesting time, and I think a lot of fans should be watching that when it comes to the original NASCARs. I know. But, you know, after your stint with Billy Hagan ended by the 86 season, you moved over to Junior Johnson's operations from 87 and 89. And I was kind of wondering what it was like to drive for him and, you know, continue those title runs that he was used to with DW and, of course, with Cayley Yarborough.
Yeah, that was a really a great opportunity, and we finished third in the points 1 year and fourth 1 year, and then I think the next year we switched to Fords, and we struggled just a little bit finishing races, and you know, we had a lot of engine failures and stuff, and it just, you know, kind of a learning curve, I guess, with the Ford stuff, and then but we're third and fourth in the points, you know, with the Chevy, but we really fully expected to have a chance at a championship, and championships are hard to win. You know, I won the one in 1984, and I thought we had a shot to win it in 85 and in 86, and I thought I had a chance in 87 and 88. And, you know, you kept thinking that next year's gonna happen, and then finally in 1996, I won the championship again. So it took forever for the next year to get there, but, you know, championships are tough to win.
They are, and the neat thing about you is that you have two different perspectives about being a champion, because you were relatively young in your late 20s in 84, but by 96 you were about my age when you won the championship with Rick Hendrick. And, you know, in July 1st of 1993, that's when your career took this positive trajectory from being with Billy Hagan, your second stint with Billy Hagan, to being with Rick Hendrick. And when you were paired up with crew chief Gary DeHart, did you feel like, man, we've got what Jeff and Ray have already, or did it take some time to build that relationship you had with him?
Well, we, you know, the first race that we ran, we went to Daytona, and I knew when I went down there and had the opportunity to go down there and join Hendrick Motorsports, and I walked through their shop down there and looked at what they had, and I thought to myself, man, this, you can win a championship at this place. There's no doubt about it. So I knew the first race out, and we finished, I think, third in the Daytona 500. And then it wasn't too many races into the season. We won it with Wilkesboro. So I just knew that, you know, I thought we had something special there, and we would have an opportunity to race for a championship. And we did. And in 96, we, you know, put it all together, won the championship. So that was quite a very exciting time for us to win the championship. And I really feel like, you know, for me personally, it meant more. The first championship meant a lot to me, but I can remember I just turned 28 that week, and I thought that, well, we won the championship, that's cool, we'll probably win it again next year. And that next year took forever to get there. And so I really did appreciate the one in 96, I think, a little bit more than I did the one in 84, just because I realized how hard it was to win the championship.
And in 96, you had not only, you know, Dale Earnhardt still killing for the championship, and by that point, Rusty was also doing well with Team Penske. You also had a pesky but young teammate in Jeff Gordon that you had to compete against. So I kind of am curious, you know, what was it like to go duke it out with him? And then especially in those last several weeks, where you guys are just basically trading punches with each other on the track, with how competitive, like, he was dominating winning races, but you and the number five team are all about consistency. Like, when you got to that race in Charlotte, was it like, whoa, we might have a chance at him if they start to crumble?
Yeah, I remember going to Charlotte there in the October race, and we won the race, and Jeff had some problems. We gained a ton of points on him that weekend, and then we went to Phoenix and, you know, had a good run out there. And then Atlanta, I think we finished fifth in Atlanta, but it was close. You know, it got down close, and we were able to, you know, beat them out there at the end. And that was tough to do because they had a great year also. And I remember before we went to the last race, Rick had a team meeting with both teams, and Rick was worried about the team that was going to finish second, you know, because we were locked into finishing first and second. We didn't know who was going to be first or who was going to be second. And I remember Ray Everham spoke up and told Rick, he said, you know, I wouldn't really worry about it. He told him, you're the one more nervous about this than any of us are. And that kind of eased everybody's mind, I think. And so we went on to Atlanta and we were able to wrap up the championship there. And it was pretty cool because my brother won the race that day and I won the championship. So that was a great ending to that season for us.
As I mentioned, the great victory lap that happened literally moments after the race, which as an 11-year-old, I remembered. I was a fan of yours, but I was also a fan of Jeff's, and I was happy for you, but very disappointed for Jeff to lose. But as an older, you know, guy, I'm happy that it worked out that way because I'm realizing how hard it is to be successful. And when you're young, you think life is so easy and you realize it's not. But also to add to that storyline, you were hurt during that race, if I recall, because at Phoenix, you were in that practice crash where you basically had some problem with your wrist. And I can't even imagine what you did to do that. That's crazy, Terry.
Well, in Phoenix out there, we had the accelerator hung, and I hit the wall in practice, like my first lap out or second lap out. And I can remember coming by the first lap, and what had happened, we took the car that we had won North Wilkesboro with, and we decided to take it to Phoenix out there. And it was a really fast car, and I won Wilkesboro with it. Rick wanted to put it in his museum, so they took the car to the museum. So we got down to the race for the championship there, and I told Gary Dehart, I said, man, we need that car back to go to Phoenix. So we went and got it out of the museum. It went through it and got it all ready and took it out there to Phoenix. And I came by the first lap, and Gary gave me my lap time, and it was pretty fast. And I thought, man, I wasn't even really trying, so this next lap should be pretty good. And I drove down in turn three, and I let off the gas, and the throttle was hung, and I hit the wall and broke a bone in my hand. And so had to get the backup car and start at the back, and then I had to go to the infield, the care center there, and the guy numbed my hand with gave me some shots in my hand so that I didn't have no feeling, so I had no pain. And then we had to do the same thing at Atlanta, because I thought, oh, I'm not gonna have to do it in Atlanta, I'll be okay, you know. No, I made one lap in Atlanta, I couldn't do it. So I was like, oh man, I gotta have another shot in my hand. So we waited till Sunday morning to do that down in Atlanta. But so that was, you know, went from unfortunate at Phoenix to wrecking our best car and breaking my hand to being able to bounce back and finish third, you know, in that race. And which was, you know, that was a real game changer for us, I think, because we were able to, you know, extend our lead just a little bit.
Yep, and for sure, even with that happening in the season finale, with Jeff going like three laps down, and even though you got those three laps back, your consistency was enough to hold them off that year. And I was thinking after that season, I was like, you and Jeff are just going to have many years of just going after it. And then that was the case in a bit. But you also had that little last chapter with Hendrick with different crew chiefs. I know you had Andy Graves, who worked with Toyota years later on. And you had your great little last victory at Darlington in 2003, which for most drivers, they don't get to bookend their career with the track that they won their first race at. But in 2003, when you won the Southern 500, I mean, how special was it for you to do it in the last season of a NASCAR Cup Series season without the playoffs, and the fact that it was really the last time that Darlington had a Southern 500 until they brought it back on Labor Day in 2015?
Yeah, you know, I thought it was really cool. Darlington was a very special racetrack for me. I ran my first race there, won my first race there, and won my last race there. The only thing I'd have done different was if I'd have known that was going to be the last race I was going to win, I'd have retired that afternoon. But, you know, you don't ever know when the last race is that you're going to win. So you just keep trying. But that's a really special place, Darlington, and always was one of my favorite tracks. A tough track, but it was one of my favorites.
And it just seems like drivers have a track that, to quote Darrell Ulrich, when you're in a race car and it's like putting on a sport coat that makes you feel good, it just makes you feel great. And there's no doubt that you did so well at the tougher tracks. And I think that's probably why you got that nickname Iceman, which I know in the 1980s folks will think about the movie Top Gun, but when people come up to you and they still talk about you being the Iceman or the Iron Man, what does it mean to you to have these fans approach you after all of these years?
Yeah, you know, there's still some that, you know, they certainly remember those days. So it makes you feel good that, you know, at least there's fans as old as you are out there.
Well, I try to think I'm still a little kid, but of course that's not how it works. I'm, you know, nowhere near the same age as I was back in the 90s, but I'm so tickled to death that I'm having this interview with you. And, you know, obviously, one of the things that is happening in 2024 is the 40th anniversary of Hendrick Motorsports, and you played a huge role with it. So I'm kind of curious. I know it's kind of one of those trite questions, Terry, but what memories stand out to you in terms of being the man that put the number 5 car into victory lane and also bring it back as a champion?
You know, I'm still a Hendrick guy, you know. And I just love that team. And we had so many great memories down there at Hendrick Motorsports. And it was just quite an honor to drive for Rick Hendrick and everybody at Hendrick Motorsports. And, you know, they're a class act. There's no way around it. I mean, they just do everything the best that it can be done. And it's a real honor to be able to drive for them for several years and to be teammates with Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson and Kenny Schrader and, you know, some of the other guys that were there over the years. So it was just, you know, I loved every minute of it. I really did.
And I certainly did too. And I can trust, you can trust me when I say my younger self would feel the same way, even though I'm still getting over 1996. But don't worry, I'm okay with it now. I'll tell my younger self if I have a chance to talk about it. But no, I'm so happy to talk about that. My last question for you, Terry, and I hope we get to do more of these in the future, because I'm enjoying our conversation, to say the least. I mean, of your 890 Cup starts, and this might be an easy answer for you, what is the one race that's going to always stand out to you, whether it's today or many years from now?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It, you know, any time you're able to win a race, it's usually a special day. And, gosh, I don't know. I think that one of the races I think that just really stands out to me is the race in Texas that I won. And I guess that was in 1999 down there. And I think we qualified like third fastest. And we had a fast car all week and weekend there and led several laps. And we got down to the end of the race. It was between Dale Jarrett and I. And they beat us out of the pits. And so I ran him back down. And I was catching even. I thought to myself, and the track was pretty kind of treacherous. The groove's not real wide down there at the time, and you had to really be careful. If you got up out of the groove, you know, you could, you know, have trouble. So, but I caught Dale and was able to pass him with about 6 or 7 laps to go, or something like that. It was less than 10 to go, and I caught him and passed him. And I never will forget. I came down the front straightaway. It's like I've never in my life noticed the crowd before, you know, driving the car. And I just noticed the whole place stood up as I was coming under past Dale down the front straightaway. And I thought to myself, oh God, don't screw this up, because people are going to be mad at me if I screw this up. And so we were able to win the race. And so that, you know, that was probably one of the ones that really stood out the most to me, that I remember the most. And I have a place in Texas, so I stayed down there after the race. And I remember seeing some of the newspaper articles the next day, and it was pretty cool. You know, Texas Terry is also one of my nicknames. And so that, I saw that in some of the articles. And so, but that was probably one of my coolest memories are down there.
And it's certainly it's a favorite of ours here in Texas, because when I step into the media center, your portrait in Victory Lane is the first thing I see. And I often, like, when people see Babe Ruth in the Yankee Stadium Memorial area, I do the same thing to it. I'm like, all right, let's have a great race weekend like Terry did in 1999. And, oh, man, that's so cool to know that the 1999 Prime Star 500 is probably one of your favorite races for sure. Terry, is there anything else you want to say to the fans for now? And hope we get to talk to each other again next year for sure.
Well, sure. Hopefully we can do it again. And great talking to you. And always like to talk to people from Texas. So good to hear from you.
Absolutely, my friend. Well, Terry, such a pleasure to interview you, to talk to you about your racing career. And when we talk next time, you bet I'm going to bring up about Bristol. I'm surprised I didn't bring up 1985 and 1999, but don't worry. We'll talk about 95 versus 99.
I remember that. Okay.
All right. You bet. Thanks so much, Terry. I appreciate it.
All right. You bet. Talk to you later.
And that was Terry Labonte in the hot seat here on TPF Live. My thanks, of course, goes to Terry and Kim Labonte for their gracious support and making this possible late last year. And of course, that was the full uncut edition. So you get to hear what Texas Terry had to say about his racing career. And my hopes are we'll get to hear more from Texas Terry this year, because he's got some great insights into racing. And personally, I think there's a lot more stories that we can unearth from Texas Terry. So stay tuned for that for sure. And of course, I want to thank Bridget Holloman as well. She is one of the longtime secretaries, administrative assistants to the National Motorsports Press Association. And sadly for us, Bridget will be retiring after the end of this month, rather. So I personally want to say thank you to Bridget for, first of all, even making that happen with Terry, because that was huge. And also thanks to Bridget for all 30 plus years of her service to the NMPA. Journalists like us are really thankful that she's able to coordinate, get things done, and she's just a superstar all around individual. And her successor has big shoes to fill, but I'm very thankful for what Bridget has done, including getting Terry's interview with us for TPF. So thank you, Bridget. And best of luck in your next endeavors. And I'd be remiss if we don't say anything about Claire B. Lang, because as you know, folks, on Wednesday, January 3rd, on her Twitter or X, whatever you guys want to call it these days, On January 3rd, 2023, it was announced that Claire B. Lang is no longer with Sirius XM. So Dialed In is no longer going to have her, if there is going to be a Dialed In. But, you know, certainly Claire has done a lot for the sport. As folks affectionately call her, CBL. My first memory of her is when she was a personality on a show called Inside NASCAR on TNN. And Steve Wade was a co-host on that show. She would often do her sort of like, hey guys, this is what I saw in the supermarket in downtown Concord. Did you know that Jeff Gordon likes to eat chocolate chip cookies? Yes, indeed. Something like that. It sounds goofy, but it's like people loved hearing that kind of stuff. And as the years gone on, you know, obviously Claire put in the work to be a journalist and hustles a lot at the racetrack. And we just wish her the best of luck with what lies ahead. I know, Brianna, you've been interviewed by CBL in the past, so I'm sure you've got some thoughts on this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hope she, you know, if she finds a different avenue or whatever, maybe she just wants to sit down for a little bit. You know, it'd be great to see her at the track. I always look forward to seeing her, running into her, just a quick little wave, and she scurries off. She's just always, you know, got her mic in hand, her little heel shoes on, and I just love seeing her at the track. So I hope whatever is next for her is even better than this last adventure she just had.
Yeah, I hope so too, because I know a lot of folks looked up to her, and it's pretty clear on X just how many people's lives she impacted. Just so many people expressing their thanks, their gratitude, and you know, as a journalist, you know, she certainly carried a lot of, you know, knowledge, a lot of stories, and was able to get that extra crevice that some folks may not have gotten if they were not her. So I'm sure she'll hopefully be back in her feet in the world of NASCAR. It would be kind of an unusual situation going to Los Angeles for the Clash or even Daytona, not seeing Claire there. And for me personally, when I go to COTA, I'm not, it's going to be weird not to see her around in the bullpen. So, you know, certainly it's going to be a unique looking NASCAR media scene for that. I know, Nathan, you've been to many, you did six races last year, so I'm sure you saw CBL quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, I see her just about every race. I know how much she'd be at just about every race. So certainly one of the hardest working people in the media center. I do always see her running around. And this is kind of verbatim, but I think she basically called me the tallest media member in the media bunch. So thanks. Because there's a couple times I remember like a foot and a half towering over Claire. So she'll definitely be missed in the media center for sure.
Yeah, it's just going to be weird. I mean, she's an establishment at this point. That's the word I want to say. She's an establishment. So whether you were a fan of CBL or not, you know, certainly what I'll say is, you know, I wish her the very best with what lays ahead for her. Hopefully she's still in NASCAR. And I hope she does do those stories again about what drivers eat, because I do miss that on TNN. She'd be like, oh, by the way, did you know Mark Martin likes the Dixie Chicks or something? I don't know. She'll say stuff like that. And then she even wrote columns, I think, for NASCAR Illustrated as well. So she's not a radio personality alone. She has done print. She has done TV. She's done it all in the world of NASCAR. So hopefully she gets to enjoy some Green Bay Packers action. But, you know, hopefully we see her back at the racetrack. So best of luck, CBL. I know a lot of fans are going to miss you right now, but hopefully this is very temporary for you and we get to see you back at the track real soon this year. But for closing thoughts on episode 100, I can't believe we've even gotten this far. I'm happy we've gotten this far. As Nathan will tell you, thank God Rob doesn't talk as much as he used to, because the first 20 episodes I can't listen to because I ran people's ears off. But thanks to Nathan's honesty and his support and friendship, I've learned to be a better host. And I'm really looking forward to the next 100 episodes because I want to tell the stories like from Brianna or Terry or all these great folks. I'm just a very fortunate guy to tell the stories that I, from a sport I love so much. And also too, I know late last year, we also lost late last year, we lost Jill DeFerrin as well. And that was, you know, the world of racing is such a small sport and we ought to appreciate each other while we're still around. So that's my purpose this year, is to do a better job telling the stories and letting the people I care about, like Brianna and Nathan and all these great folks in NASCAR and racing, to be there and share what they know and their experiences. So that's my goal. What's your closing thoughts, y'all?
Go ahead, Nathan. Sure, let's hear it.
I'll go first. I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. It's been crazy because this is like one of the first things this podcast was basically kind of the first thing that we launched when I joined TPF, like within a couple of weeks. So I don't know, that's kind of a milestone for, I guess, of how long I've been here for. I mean, I've been here for, I know there's a few weeks where we didn't do it, but we're going on like 2.5 years I've been around here now. So that's kind of crazy. But very much looking forward to what's in store, hopefully 100 more or more than that. And hopefully we'll kick it off with you know, a really good 2024 season.
Yeah, I mean, the 100th episode is just a testament to, I mean, of course, like how hard you guys have been working to keep it going, but also just how fast time flies. My gosh, how is it already 100? And how is it already 2024? How is it all these things? I don't know. It's like I can't keep up. The world just is like spinning faster and faster and faster.
Well, as someone wise once told me, the older you get, the faster time does go. So I don't know. Nathan's so young that time probably goes really slowly for him. But for me and you, Brianna, I think time goes a little bit faster in our age, don't you think?
It's just flying.
It is. But, you know, I couldn't do this alone. People like you, people like Nathan are why I have TPF. I've got TPF Live. So I don't want people to think that I'm some egomaniac who's like, I did it on my own. No, I have a great team, of a great village, if you will. And that's why we're here nearly 2.5, almost 3 years later, which is crazy. And TPF alone has turned 16 years old this year, which is insane. I started this dream because I got homesick in the Philippines, and I thought, what's the one thing I can do to make myself feel a little less isolated from the rest of the world? And I was like, oh, NASCAR. And I found a way to watch the races. I won't say how I found it because I don't want to get arrested, but let's just say that I was able to get creative and found a way to watch the races at 2 or 3 a.m. in the morning. And what started off as a way to cope with being sad and lonely has brought me a bunch of friends, a lot of associates. And I could go on and on about that, but I'm not going to make this into the Kleenex tissue hour. This is supposed to be a happy show, but I'm very thankful that my 22-year-old self thought, let's do something that gets me out of my comfort zone. And at almost 40, I'm thinking, you know what? I haven't gotten uncomfortable yet. Let's get more uncomfortable and have more fun in 2024. So that's what I'll be doing. And thanks to you both, of course, because y'all are the biggest TPF supporters I know. So I'm looking forward to episode 101 and beyond. And maybe we'll do these on the racetrack, at the racetrack too, because they give us access to the radio room sometimes. So there might be a recording at the racetrack one day. We'll see. That could be fun. But with that, folks, I think it's time to go and wrap up episode 100. So for Nathan Solomon, Brianna O'Leary, and Terry Labonte, I'm your host, Rob Tiongson, saying thanks so much for tuning in to TPF Live. For our previous 99 episodes, check those out on Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Stay tuned next week for episode 101, the 101 Dalmatians edition of our show. But until next time, let's all go get that checkered flag. And as I like to say all the time, so long, everyone.